Jope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Jope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on, I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Jope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550.
Yes, it is. Yesterday, to start, we parsed a couple of Sean McDermott quotes. Or it was really one from yesterday and one from last week. Maybe two from yesterday and one from last week. A collection of moments here of late where McDermott sounded not too at ease with certain things about his team. Last week it was injuries. Yesterday it was safeties. Also about how at wide receiver, after the top three, they have to figure out what is going to happen. So, there's a couple of things with that. There's that it's what he's saying, and then there's also like why he's saying it. You know, with safety, we did both. It makes sense for him to say, to be concerned about that. That makes sense. Doesn't have to be right or, you know, how you feel, but it makes sense. And then, you know, is it something else that he was willing to say it in public? You know, what does it say about Bishop or just how he's looking at things, what he's trying to, if there is ever like, if there is here a longer game that he's playing, trying to get certain messages across. Today we have Joe Brady saying what?
He loves everyone.
Wideouts are.
Good cop, bad
is
cop.
Is that possible?
Good cop, bad cop.
I have yet to hear Brady ever say anything that I can work with. Like, it's just always kind of one-way traffic. Everything's always exactly how we want it. And it then comes with the rest of, you know, the rest of the sauce. You know, well, you can always get better, that kind of stuff. Could you love their scene at wide receiver? Could you?
Sure, you can choose to love anything.
How could you love Shakir? Well, how could you? That you win. It's a choice. I guess if it's a choice,
right.
Just say you do. Right? We've done that in life.
Yeah, sorry. No, I'm not trying to defuse you, but like that's, you know.
He doesn't have Shakir. They're coming off a shutout. Like, okay, Mike White, Mitchell Trubisky against mostly the Bears backups, but I couldn't. I mean, I've got a third-year guy in Tyrell Shavers that's like my lead story at the position so far, and who's to say if that even matters? Elijah Moore, what? Curtis Samuel, what? Palmer, a little bit. Coleman seems to qualify as like one of the top stories of camp because he's made a few plays in practice. So I don't know. I don't know how you could really love it.
I think it's a choice. That's really it. I think what I think you're doing, what you sound to me like you're doing, basing that entirely on what the preseason games have looked like.
Well,
and you know, that's what we see most of, right? I mean, other than some clips here and there that the team, well, I mean, you know, reporters also tweet stuff too, but you know, you're going to get the slow motion highlights from practice of anybody on the team making a good play, a good catch. But we're not seeing rep over rep over rep over rep, and we're certainly not watching it back again later in the evening on film like he is. So there's a larger sample size that he's dealing with. Whereas, you know, in the games, yeah, Shavers, we talk more about Shavers because he's in a battle to get on the team, and it's a, you know, reasonably compelling story because he's been close, you know, closer last year than he was the year before that, but you know, that's an investment in the idea that he'll make it. So he gets a lot of conversation, probably disproportionately so to what he'll ultimately mean to the team, should he even make it. Whereas someone like Coleman and Palmer, and even Shakir while he's hurt, like even McDermott said, we know who the top three are. Like there's no real debate about Coleman. You can just decide whether you care about what it sounds like he looks like in these practices, or you can just not, you know, just not do anything with that, because mostly what you're going to hear from anyone is, oh, it's good. It really looks good. It's going great. You know, that's with, you know, inside the team wearing a, you know, a team polo shirt. That's what you're going to get. But I think Coleman has been, like, I'm choosing to buy on Coleman. We'll see if I'm a chump by October or November, but I'm buying that he has improved, and I'm counting on him to matter. So, you know, it sort of what you want to do with what a coach sounds like about them often depends on how predisposed or not you are to agreeing with it before you've even heard it. Like, if I'm walking around thinking, man, I like what I'm hearing about Coleman. I like how various reporters I'm following, of course, including our Sal Capaccio, are talking about him. And then you hear the coach say he's made great progress in this area and that area. And you're just sort of nodding going, yeah, all right, yeah. And if you don't pay any attention to that stuff or don't buy it at all, you're going to hear it and just go, it's just fluff. It's the standard coach speak stuff. So, like, where you come in, what your point of entry is, and how you feel about a certain subject before you even hear the coach talk is going to slant how you feel about it, probably.
You're saying we're confirming our priors here on the side of the room?
Yeah, sure, to an extent. And
probably.
Right now my priors are I'm buying Coleman. And, you know,
the fact that Shakir is not even there makes it hard for me to listen to how he loves the group right now. He doesn't even have his best guy.
What is that? He knows his best guy is going to be back, or I think he's reasonably confident his best guy is going to be back. So it's a known commodity. He knows what he's got there.
That's different, I think, but that's right. Of course that would be right. Just seems like something that would maybe slow you down. Or he's just not worried about it at all. You know, he'll be back week one. I think an interesting thing might be happening in the NFL right now with injuries. And Shakir, I can only say, might be an example of it. So he had the high ankle sprain. And one of the first things McDermott said when alluding to it was how he's had that before. He said he was, you know, I don't know his exact quote, but he was, you know, wanted to be cautious with Shakir because he's had this injury before. If it happens to be an injury that would be harder to recover from a second time, I don't know. But, you know, at first he sounded kind of worried by saying that. And then next time around, it was, what I'm hearing is he should be good for the opener. Teams are playing it way more carefully than ever with injuries. We know that. They admit that. And yesterday with Bishop, as one example, we talked about how, well, you know, here's McDermott talking about how he hasn't had consistency there. He hasn't really had enough of Bishop yet, I think he would say. And is that some part the new world where it's just we've decided everything has been optimized and we've just decided as a society that as a football player, it's not worth it.
Being careful is prudent. Yeah.
Yeah. So you don't get your odds of getting what you want as McDermott from Bishop or any other player in 2025 are worse necessarily than they would have been 10 or 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's possible without saying it. And, you know, I'll bet he would tell you he doesn't want to sound like he's admonishing someone for being in the trainer's room again, just to, you know, use a phrase that is pretty familiar to people.
That's right, too.
But it might very well be that somewhere in, like, it comes out when he's talking that, oh, he's in the tub again. You know, like, he's again with him. You know, like, I don't know how it works. If every morning he gets, you know, an email from trainers or talks with them, and they tell him, like, here's what we think this guy and this guy and this guy, and it's a pretty long list. It has been frequently this summer. Here's what we think they can do, and you know, maybe when he sees Bishop's name there, it's just like, oh. Like, I'm really counting on this guy. We are counting on this guy. I really need him. And I know what he needs to do and be exposed to get ready. And we're just not able to do it. And, man, maybe a part of him wishes he could push through it.
Right. So he's just one example that may or may not even sort of apply here. But I think if you have everybody is more careful with injuries, any sort of misstep, and you're off, right? That's what we're seeing. We just had Lamar Jackson today go down on a play, knocked down after a throw. They see him flexing his hand and leaving practice. 5 minutes later, they're saying it's a foot thing. I mean, it's just sort of like, it used to be that, and it's not confusing why it's different. It used to be that these kind of reports would take you pretty quickly to, all right, this is bad. You know, somebody's leaving practice, carted off. Mm-hmm. This is bad. What's logical? Team's more cautious. Anything, almost, you're going to leave practice. Like anything. They're going to check you out, put some ice on it, check you back tomorrow. We're going to do that. Now you have the Bills. It goes back like to last week. You have the Bills with 15 or so names on the injury report. Coach sounding a little uptight about it. It's possible that, and Shakir would be my example for this, I think, also a guess, but it's possible that a lot of these injuries are just not a big thing. It's still, you know, early, it's still mm-hmm. a month from the season at that time, and he wants, it makes sense for him, like on Bishop, he wants to evaluate, he wants his whole team there so we can compare and he can try things and sort of get somewhere here, but he doesn't have that. And that's the league now. I just, saying all this is sort of background for Shakir, because ever since that second time around to my ears on from McDermott, it's okay, Shakir is okay. Like they know it.
Yeah.
And he's not going to play in the preseason anyway.
Right.
So maybe I'd want to guess that his injury is not bad. And here's Brady today with this quote. Like he kind of knows that.
Sure. And it makes sense that they would be extra careful with Shakir. It does sort of fly in the face a little bit of loving the whole room, 1 through 8 or whatever it was. I think that's exactly what Brady said, 1 through 8. I don't think anyone should mistake that for they're going to keep 8 receivers, because that would be insanity. That you can afford – there's no crisis around Shakir. They know who he is. They know what he is. They know what kind of chemistry he's already developed pretty quickly with Josh Allen. And so there's no – He's not someone that you're going to say he needs the reps. He needs time on task. He needs any of it. Like the other receivers, like Curtis Samuel as an example, who's been out, he's a known commodity within the league, but he was not available most of last summer and hindered by injury most of last year, showed some of what he was capable of later on in the year, but now we're back hoping for a full off season with him, get him to develop with Allen, you know, nuanced little even like gestures and just whatever happens between a quarterback and a pass catcher. And that hasn't happened with Samuel. So even though he's a much more experienced player than Shakir, he's not much more experienced playing here with Josh Allen and in this system, where Shakir could miss all of this and be on a cruise boat and come in here on Labor Day and be like, okay, give me my uniform. You know, provided he's, you know, not just eating, you know, cannolis the whole time he's on the cruise ship.
Oh, that late night pizza.
And you know, it's going to be fine. There's not a crisis around an injury to a player that is absolutely has set a standard that they accept. Like, we know who this guy is. So everybody else, not everybody else, but certain guys, the guys we've talked about here, Bishop, certainly Samuel, who I'm using as an example, even a newer guy like Elijah Moore, we need these guys out here. They have not helped us separate them. It's still, you know, it is kind of interesting to me that Brady uses the larger group, whereas McDermott told you yesterday, I know who this top half of the roster is. I have no idea about 3 through 8 or 12 or how many guys there are here. And Brady's just like, yeah, everybody's good. You know, I kind of doubt that. I mean, they're all not candidates to make the team. But Shakir's absence to me is immaterial to the comment. Like I wouldn't take any, you know, him not being there. It's like Brady, it's another indication that they're confident he's going to be here. Cause I think if they were more worried about him, then maybe they wouldn't sound like that, or he wouldn't sound like that.
Right. That's what I mean. If he loves where their receivers are right now, he might have just sort of taken Shakir for granted at this point.
Right.
Cause he's not practicing or anything like that. So, okay, there were a couple of reports this morning that the Vikings, among a couple of other teams, are looking for veteran receivers to trade for. So weird. Again, it's one of these where at least two reporters had that at the same time. Like, it's that's on your that's scheduled on your phone to tweet that the Vikings are calling around on receivers. I mean, we don't have anybody, or do we?
That is that could be of interest. I mean, how much sweetener do I have to throw into the pot to get someone to take Curtis Samuel off my hands with the contract? Like, that is the ideal scenario to me. Irrespective of, Joe Brady loves him. He had a great year with him in Carolina 6 years ago or whenever the hell that was. And, you know, Brady loves everyone. He doesn't have to be cold and calculated about this. He's coaching guys to get the best out of them, so he's going to sound that way. If I'm Brandon Bean, I'm trying to put together my receiver room. I'm also maybe trying to open up cap room for who knows what else. Something to supplement their defense, their safety room, their pass rush. I don't know. If they could trade Samuel for, like, the last pick in the draft, I'd throw in a fifth or something just to try to make that happen.
The trade is, whether it's Curtis Samuel or someone else, these kind of trades are the player and a 27-7th for a 26-7th.
Fine, whatever.
Move up a year.
Even if it's got to be more than that. I said a fifth. I think that, because that would alleviate. There's a massive is a little strong. It's not Stephon Diggs money, but the problem you have with just releasing Samuel, if you don't trust he's going to be healthy and you feel like other guys have outperformed him or are more dependable or some combination thereof, you're saving very little money. A couple $100,000, I think, is all you're saving. So you're going to have dead money for this guy not on your team, whereas if you can find someone to trade him to, you're saving almost the entirety of that money. And, you know, I would assume they would have a use for that. And that's, to me, optimal, because I don't know how you could trust Sammy. You could love what he is when he's healthy, but he has rarely been healthy when he's been here. And he's had other seasons where this has been the story with him. Staying on the field is hard. So however much you want to count on availability and dependability, that's the guy that, if you've got a logjam of him, Elijah Moore, Laviska Shenault, and Tyrell Shavers, Samuel is the best idea if I can trade him to move, I think. Because I don't know how much more you should expect to get out of him than you would out of any of those other guys. I think if they're all peak health and available all the time, Samuel's he's the most accomplished of the group and maybe therefore the best, but I can't rely on it. So that leaves me wanting to remove him from the equation. And I feel like the money makes him harder to just release. And that's not how I want to put my team together, right? I would rather be able to choose the guy that I think is going to be able to do more for me, even if it's just because he'll be available more. And that's, you know, that requires a lot of guesswork, because if he's healthy now, you know, maybe he'll be healthy all year. Or maybe he's going to stub his toe again. So that's the player that I would like most to see them find their way clear of, but I think it's the hardest to do because of the money.
You know, the counterpoint is simply, why am I trading anybody for a draft pick right now? You would need to make, for me, like, they would need to make use of the cap room. There would have to be some second part to it, which may be, you know, there, might be out there for them. But I was thinking, just from, not even from a Bill standpoint, about this Minnesota report and racking my brain for, like, who would you be able to get? And my first instinct is to eliminate all the good teams, because why are they giving veteran receivers away? It's not the time of year to be maneuvering around the salary cap. You might have to escape from a situation or two, and that could be this.
Mm-hmm.
But you sort of take anybody that's who's a receiver that has been rumored or talked about as a trade piece potentially this offseason, Tyreek Hill. Can you imagine 2 weeks before the season, Miami trading Tyreek Hill? I mean, for whatever the parameters, whatever the, like, you just sort of cut your legs out before week one. Who's going to do that? So it wouldn't be somebody, I mean, it could happen, but wow.
So, yeah, I don't think it's someone that's, like, formerly the best receiver in the league, like, you know, in recent memory.
It wouldn't be a player on a team that has any chance. Because why am I, unless it's somebody closer to irrelevant, in which case, what is Minnesota's incentive? Minnesota is going to play without Jordan Addison for three games. They have Jefferson, they have Hockenson, they have a young quarterback that they're trying to make work.
But they've got other receiver injuries that are making the situation what it is.
They do, but like their kids, you know. Rondale Moore was a few years into his career. He's done for the season. Jalen Naylor, Felton, like they've just got a lot of unknown, and some of it's hurt, like you say. So what would they want to get out of it? They'd want, you know, maybe Samuel is kind of in the right class, somebody that has experience and is a little bit of a stopgap for them. And I don't know, it's a little too easy, but what Rondale Moore might have been is what Samuel could be. You know, you just, Samuel gets typecast.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe something like that is possible. Yeah. I just don't know if the Bills would be inclined to move anybody like that when you're in this window.
The only reason you do it is because you're making a bet. Your bet is, like I've already said, if he's healthy, you believe in him. He's probably the best of that group of guys. But you're betting, what do you want to bet on? Do you want to bet on him staying healthy and actually helping you? Or do you want to bet on one of the other guys that isn't as known but might actually be as good a fit and be available for you? Maybe I'm giving up something if everyone's at their best, but I'm betting on that not being the case, and I can offload the money. Like, if the reason he stays here is because of the dead money, I almost don't care what I do with it. I just don't want it to be the reason that he's here instead of Elijah Moore or Laviska Shenault or whomever, because that's not optimal. That is a decision you just got to, like, okay, well, we're sort of stuck. And if you can unstick yourself, it'd be better to have that money in your hip pocket for something that comes up during the season. If someone is, you know, someone gets hurt, someone's available, I have the flexibility. And so I think that would be the course of action I would be trying to pursue. I have no idea how they're positioning it. They may feel like Samuel is so important and if he's healthy, could help them so much that they're willing to risk it. He may miss time or not be entirely himself if he's on the field, kind of like he was for most of the season last year. That might be the bet that they make. But the other half of that bet, the other side of that bet is availability, reliability, the money, and what have I got behind him, and can it reasonably replicate what he would give me? And they've got, you know, enough guys there to try to pick and choose from. You know, if they want to use him on jet sweeps, Laviska Shenault can probably do that for you. Elijah Moore can probably do that for you. So it's not like he has to be so vital. So I saw that news about Minnesota. The Jets were also mentioned as a team that might be looking for veteran, you know, established receiver or just receiver help in general. And really any team that's in that boat, I want my GM calling them about Samuel.
Is it only a wide receiver room that the offensive coordinator could love? Or, you know, am I trying too hard? 803-0550 for your calls on this and other Bills topics. We'll be here all day. Sigmund Bloom today and Sal Capaccio with his report coming up at, that'll be 5. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Thanks for listening. Lines are open for your calls here on WGR.
I love where our wideouts are right now. I know we've had some injuries, but I like where we're at. I feel good about 1 through 8 of being able to contribute for us. Like, all different skill sets, we're going to have to figure out how to put them in and figure out those positions, personnel groupings, and we'll get to the regular season for that. But I feel really good with where our wideouts are. Josh has a good comfort level with them, and I know we haven't got some preseason games with them. You know, it was good to get Curtis back yesterday, kind of moving around, and we'll obviously ramp him back up. But I have no questions with our wideouts going into the season.
So you're the one, Joe Brady, offensive coordinator. I guess if there were one person that would, you'd want to have no questions about, other than usage and all the other things he said, it would be the offensive coordinator of the team. That's the guy you really need to have this figured out. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here at 803-0550. Sigmund Bloom, Sal Capaccio today. The Buccaneers are next for the Bills on Saturday night in Tampa. They announced that Baker Mayfield will skip this game. So he'll not, he might have played it the first one, but I think maybe this means he won't have played at all. More and more common to skip the entire preseason. No Mayfield. No Chris Godwin, Bulldog. You were excited to see Chris Godwin, but he is not healthy.
Yeah, really hurts his ADP.
Yeah, it's taking a beating.
How
You're right.
How was that with the lingo?
Very, very accurate.
Doing okay, yeah.
But
very natural, too.
He is someone that really kind of started off on the wrong foot this offseason. I mean, coming off injuries. One of the first things that was said about Godwin was an announcement maybe by Todd Bowles, their coach, that he had needed a second procedure. Uh-oh.
Right. Well, this is why, you know, within reason, you don't necessarily decide who you're drafting, even with your premium picks, based on what you've got in-house and what you think, you know, you should have. Because I don't know, as the draft was coming, maybe they were really worried about Godwin when they picked Ibuka. But they wouldn't have known that McMillan was going to suffer a pretty very serious neck, not more than pretty, a very serious neck injury that could cost him half the season or who knows, even more. So they've, you know, at the time it's like, wow, they've got Evans and Godwin coming back and this McMillan who kind of emerged last year. What are they doing? And it turns out their top two receivers for the opener are likely to be the guy they drafted and Mike Evans. And everybody, the other two guys of the group, you know, the key top end guys are not going to be available.
That's how it looks. McMillan for sure, Godwin almost definitely as well to miss the beginning of the season. Yeah. Don't draft for need. I mean, you could, you're sort of making a case that they might have known there was some need there that we didn't.
Yeah, right.
But what they did, and I think anybody around here has the right to be jealous of this. And the Bills, of course, have been very successful, but receiver is always under scrutiny here. The Bucs took the thing they were best at and drafted more of that, which I think is very hot. Like, that's, of course, talk about confirming priors. This is me doing that again because that's what I want from my team is I want deadly outside weapons, game changers. And the Bucs have, you know, maybe they have three at this point with Ibuka. I wonder if he would play in this game. I would think maybe not.
I'd be stunned if anyone that they're counting on to be on the field for the first snaps of the regular season plays in this game almost across the league.
I think what I'm falling for here, because you're right to sort of jump in on me on that, is a little bit of the old school four preseason game world where this is the last one, but it's also the third one. Mm-hmm. And maybe your guys just have not, like, this is the Bills. I mean, just have not really done any preseason work yet. So wouldn't you want a little bit, with there still being 2 full weeks plus before the regular season starts, but I guess no is what teams are probably going to decide mostly.
Which I still think generally is the right approach. I mean, I know we'll see. I mean, teams, the Bengals took Joe Burrow and their number one offense out for a pretty extensive spin in the game on Monday night, and I think they played in the first one as well.
That's right.
And, you know, what? Why are they doing that? Well, notoriously here, for a few seasons running, they've had slow starts, right? 0-3 last year, maybe 0-2 the year before. And, you know, you can dig, they dug out of 0-2 the year before. 0-3, they never really did. And so we want to make sure we don't fall into that again. So they're buying the reps mattering and the momentum that the offense will be feeling going into the regular season, that will help them start better. And, you know, we'll anecdotally out here, some will, I don't think I will, but I think the league pays attention. If the Bengals start 3-0 after doing that, maybe more teams next summer, especially if they have a slow start to the regular season, this could even include the Bills, who knows, right? If it just does not go well early and they haven't played at all, like I don't expect, I don't know yet, but it would surprise me I've been surprised before, though. Like, if Allen saw the field at all in this Tampa game, he has played in this game before. Just a series, just to get out there, right? Cadence, communication with the coordinator, whatever. But if a team starts slow and they haven't played at all, some of them will switch. Because I think more, I'm not tracking this, so I don't have data for you, but just observationally speaking, it feels like maybe more teams have swung a little bit back to playing guys. Like, the Rams were the extreme. We're not playing at all. Just forget it. The preseason doesn't matter. We're not exposing these guys. And some teams followed suit. And I feel like there's been a little swing back on that. But that might just be the games I happen to be watching. You know, I watched Washington and Cincinnati on Monday night. And, of course, the starting players on both sides of the ball.
You got both.
Played some in that game. But I'm good without doing it. So I kind of hope Allen doesn't even make a cameo just to, you know, get in the huddle once, because that's what I think practice is for, and especially a joint practice. Now, the Bills only had one of those, like one day of that with the Bears. Other teams have done, you know, more than one. Like, I don't know that anyone's done more than two, but some teams, Miami, for example, has done this more than once this summer.
Bills favored by 3. Isn't this from that one ranking we talked about last week, the teams with the two worst backup quarterbacks?
Well, I know the Bills are down there. And yeah, you said Trask was the only one behind Trubisky.
Right.
Yeah.
31 and 32.
Yeah.
Bills road favorites.
Well,
I think that means you should take them.
It's because they got whooped last week, and they'll be out to, like, you know, send a message that they're not a doormat.
Absolutely. It's about time they sent that message. Four bad games in a row on defense.
Possibly be.
You waiting for that?
Not that that's the Bills' motivation, but like the betting market?
No.
I don't know. What else are you.
It's why the Bears were the bet on Sunday. Look at me now. I know how it's going to go. Is that what I sound like?
Well, yeah, but because the ones were going to play and the Bills weren't. But if none of the ones are playing, why are the Bills favored? Because they got their asses kicked last week and they're going to try to get it right. It's the only thing I think you'd have to stand on there.
There's probably some evaluation of the second string, right? I mean, not every backup is created equal around, you know, per position. So maybe there's reason to think like the offensive line or something. I don't know. There's an answer. Yep. There's an answer.
I'll ask Sam on Friday. You won't be here, but I will.
I miss Sam a bunch.
I will ask Sam about that.
He's out there in Vegas getting pizza, betting on the NFL.
Out in Vegas getting pizza,
isn't it? He's out there doing stuff. I just have draft after draft here. Friday for me is the Bourbon Trail, which I've never done.
All right, well.
Whatever that is.
I assume it's a tour you can hopefully be guided and driven to.
A guided bourbon tour.
That you don't have to drive.
At. It's like a pub crawl for bourbon.
Yeah.
And hopefully I don't have to pedal like one of those.
Oh, man.
Those beer.
Just get out of here with that.
Imagine a bunch of us doing that.
You are never getting me on one of those.
It'll be my first time in Louisville.
All right.
And we have two drafts Saturday, two drafts Sunday, and then we'll trek home for whatever's next. Sigmund Bloom today.
I saw.
Speaking of fantasy.
Yeah.
He DM'd me with some Bills takes. He wanted to bounce a couple Bills takes off me. And I responded and then said, hey, are you free later? And I wonder if he sort of, he did go through with it, but I wonder if he was hesitant to DM me thinking that he's walking into a trap.
This is going to end up in me devoting 20 minutes of my afternoon to you if I reach out to you.
Whether he believes it or not, there are times when I have not asked him on. Like, there are times when I do
interact with him and
I do have this instinct with plenty of people. Like, yeah, it's too recent.
Yeah.
Don't overdo it. But, you know, he said he can't wait.
I am like this with Tyler Dunn. Like, we will text now and then about music or what, you know, whatever. And I sometimes will think, hey, what are you doing? And other times I think, okay, don't do that this time. Because I like hearing from him, and I like exchanging ideas with him, even, you know, non-football related ideas. And I don't want to have him feel like you're describing that. I don't want to be reluctant to text me because he feels like it's going to end with him having to either say, yes, I'll give you 20 minutes, or no, and then feel bad. Or something, or even just a little bit bad. Like, no,
people should be able once in a while to reach out to you socially and not get asked for
a favor. Basically,
for a favor,
right? That's what it
they
ends
should
up being.
Be able to do that.
Yes.
Well, today, as it happens, Sigmund was asked, and he'll be on. He just was texting me about
good
timing and such. Sal will be on later as well. Mike Schopen and the Bulldog here at 803-0550. This is WGR. Welcome back. We'll talk to Sigmund Bloom in about 15 minutes. Sal Capaccio later as well. The Blue Jays lost in Pittsburgh 2-1.
That's hard to do.
Yeah, they didn't hit at all today. Springer homered right away, and that's all they – I mean, Bichette had a leadoff double that they didn't really even threaten much in this game.
So you're telling me the Pirates won a game that Skeens didn't pitch? Not that they win all the games that Skeens pitches. They often don't score any runs for him, so he doesn't win, even though he's excellent.
They did win with him on Monday against Toronto. So they win 2 out of 3 in the series. The Blue Jays are off tomorrow. Then they go to Miami. 4.5. You ever feel this way? I almost felt honored last night to watch Scherzer. It felt like a special gift.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a bandwagon Blue Jays guy. And when he signed with them, didn't do anything for me. And he started with that thumb injury, and he like went out immediately.
You must have thought, like at his age, this is it. Maybe they won't get anything out of this guy.
41, and you know he pitched for the Mets for a minute, but I haven't felt the Mets, so to speak, in a long time. He's never really been one of my guys on one of my teams, fantasy, just as a fan.
Mm-hmm.
He's out there, but I've never had any particular compulsion to go watch him. But last night, I'm into the Blue Jays. It's on at Pittsburgh. And he was a little wild for him early in the game, got through it. And you could really, fifth or sixth inning, I think it was the fifth inning, maybe the sixth, when he was nearing 100 pitches. Like, they let him go. And they had the lead. And he was really grinding. You see him talking to himself. And he gave off, I think, the impression like this is really big. He just, for a guy that's, you know, World Series and Cy Youngs and everything, maybe that's part of, I say maybe because I don't really know because I haven't been that intimate with his career, but is something he's known for. I wanted to think last night that just like total competitor. And he was super fired up to get through. He gets the last guy, maybe Sawinski, and that's it for his night. Pump the fist, you know, kind of running off the field like a kid, you know, just it was really, really fun to watch him last night. And I felt like, you know, I mean, I've been aware of him.
Yep.
Like any baseball fan, at least for a long time. But now he's on the Jays and they're in first place and he's really going now. He's healthy. And it was cool. Last night. Yeah. I wish I'd been at the ballpark.
I watched a good bit of that, too, with Owen. And he commented about the way the season started and whether, you know, how surprising is it that this guy still looks this good, considering how the season began. And like I said, that's why I said that, because I said the same thing to Owen. You might have thought he was just going to be, you know, that this is the end of the line. This is how it ends. I signed in Toronto, but couldn't get on the field. And, you know, thanks. I'll see me at the Hall of Fame in a few years.
Doesn't seem like that's how he's wired.
No, instead he's just So I mostly agree. I didn't feel like it was special watching him, but I certainly enjoyed it. When I turned the game on and saw that he was pitching, like, oh, okay, you know, this is a big famous dude. So you know,
nothing better than a great pitcher in baseball to watch. Ohtani at Coors tonight, by the way.
Yes.
You want to check that out.
Yeah, I did check it out already earlier today. Rockies plus 220 or 240 on the money line.
Not even that good. Against the Dodgers? Not even that good.
You just don't see a number like that for home, road, anything. Like that's a big number on the money line.
I asked you off the air, you said yes that you'd seen the minor league highlights of Victor Robles throwing a bat at the pitcher. And this is not just throwing a bat. Like, it was an inside pitch, and he took a step, you know, step back, and then he paused for like a second, and he absolutely just hurled the bat at the mound, which you don't see that often. But he got 10 games for that.
Right. I think he dropped the bat because the pitch was inside, then picked it up threw it at the guy.
Maybe.
Like, he made an extra effort. It looked like he was just holding the bat. He's like, I'm going to pick this up and throw it.
You really wonder what's going through a guy's mind when he does that. Remember Roger Clemens throwing the bat in the World Series?
The broken piece at Piazza? Sure.
Yeah, one of the most amazing things you'll see. 2000 World Series, Subway Series, broken bat. Clemens takes a few steps forward, picks up Piazza's bat, and throws it at him. I just learned, I don't remember ever knowing this, from a Joe Posnanski book, that Clemens claimed he thought it was the ball.
Yeah, I remember hearing that.
Why would you throw the ball at him?
That's what
if you thought it was a ball, you'd pick it up put it in your glove.
Probably in this very room, obviously it's a few years prior to me working with you, I think I said the exact same thing.
I mean,
because I remember hearing that explanation way back then, that he thought it was the ball. Like, what?
How is that a possible defense for throwing the bat?
You thought a splintered piece of wood was the ball? You're a baseball player.
And why would you throw the ball at him anyway?
Right, right. It's not plausible on any level.
No, that's right.
That he would have thought it was the ball.
Completely ridiculous excuse.
It's not dodgeball.
It's so not dodgeball.
It's also not round. It's also, you know, splintered, and you saw it coming at you. Just shut up.
I believe Joe Torre said the same thing about it. He said Roger thought it was the ball. But Joe, so what if it was? Like, what? There were no consequences.
Why would he throw the ball
at this poor guy got 10 games.
Right.
This was from close range.
Right.
And it was splintered. Like you said, it was broken, probably more dangerous.
Could have stuck right in Piazza's leg.
No consequences. Other than 25 years later, here we are. Like, he thought it was the ball. It's one of the worst excuses ever made, I think, in life.
It is an all-timer. I'm glad you remembered it.
I just was listening to this book, and I discovered that. Again, I don't remember ever knowing it. Sigmund Bloom, footballguys.com, next here on WGR.